that's kind of my, that's my kind of music, actually. I like older music, and I always have, even as a kid. Strange that way. But it is the kind of music I really enjoy. That's Jimmy McGriff on his Hammond B3 and fellow jazz organist Dr. Lonnie Smith with Dishin' the Dirt. It's from McGriff's 2000 album, McGriff's House Party. Well, yeah, it's a house party music. That's their house party music. Other people will have different ideas about house party music, but this is my kind of music. I thought I would share music with you so you get a sense that, you know, maybe you want to go back in time a little bit and scout around and see what you find in the way of music. So we've had one heck of a week to deal with. And the bad part is, it's not over. There's more to come. We've been discussing the various aspects of the political chaos that envelops us on Lead Stories, but it's Free Your Mind Friday, and on Free Your Mind Friday, you usually stretch out, and you can talk about whatever it is you wish to talk about. But there may be others who, in addition to just, you know, opining, they may want to also take things in a different direction, and you have freedom to do so on Free Your Mind Friday. Good news, our regular number is back, 888-874-4888. That's the old standard number. Remember, PRN has just moved, and we had a temporary number. But now we're back to our old permanent number, 888-874-4888, and we can get the conversation started as soon as you're ready. What's on your mind? The idea here is to, take advantage of the opportunity to stretch out a little bit beyond your what you consider to be the confines of programs. You know, a program is about health, and that's all you discuss. Good thing about Free Your Mind Friday is that the floor is open. You take the conversation where you want it to go, and hopefully somewhere in there you have a strong opinion. It doesn't matter whether people think you're right or wrong. It matters only that you make your case for whatever it is that you're talking about, and maybe people will pick up on what you offer and add to it or challenge it in some way. But that's really where we're going on Free Your Mind Friday. It's an open forum. It's unscripted, as you know, and we just talk about the things that we think really matter. I would encourage you to also think in terms of encouraging or eliciting reaction. It's not just you get up and you talk and then that's the end of that. That's not what it's for. It's to encourage discussion and debate. So it is not just, you know, I'm standing on my soapbox, I have this to say, I have said it, and I'm gone. That's not what it is. Discussion and debate. Things that encourage discussion and debate. Whether people agree or disagree, it's not the point. The point is that whatever it is you offer on Free Your Mind Friday should encourage further discussion and debate. People taking you on, people agreeing with you, people having an entirely different opinion to add on to what it is you're offering. So we have continuity of discussion. Again, the number is 888-874-4888. And we start in Berkeley. Harvey, it's been a while.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hello.
Well, I'd like to talk about President Trump talking about he wanted to give $54 billion on top of the military-industrial complex. He wanted to give them $54 billion more, and he would slash social programs, including lunch programs for kids. But in doing so, he would actually, a lot of these social programs that exist out there are support people. And, you know, if they don't have food and what they need, they will turn to crime. And so you'll get an upswing in prostitution, drug addiction, alcoholism, and street crime, which puts us all in harm's way. And the beneficiaries of this program will be, of course, the police and the military and the prisons for profit. The police will harvest these new crime breakers and put them in prisons for profit where that's our America's answer to third world labor, and the corporations will gain benefit of having slave labor. And so it's so terrible because so much of our national gross product goes toward, I call it the Grim Reaper, and the social programs, they have to fight for scraps off the table. So President Trump wants to continue along this line and create more crime in the streets, and also it'll make people, you know, if there's less jobs around because a lot of programs will be slashed, one of the only alternatives would be that people would go into the military more. They'll seek jobs through the military, and so it'll make us more into a war machine than we have been already. And so this is his answer to making a better world. And I think that giving $54 billion more to the military-industrial complex is not the way to go.
Do you think that there is sufficient opposition to this particular intention by the president to add $54 billion to the military budget and take it from social programs?
I heard that there is actually a lot of opposition against it. Plus, I heard a lot of the military generals, a lot of them got together and signed a letter. I forget the number, but signed a letter saying that we don't really want this. We don't want this extra money. So leave it where it belongs to help people of America, because it's basically our tax dollars being redirected to making us slaves to this new corporate entity they call prisons for profit. And I think President Obama, one of the good things was he was trying to wind down that program, but I think Jeff Sessions came on and said, no, we're not going to end it. We're going to let it go on. And it's a travesty to American people, I think.
Thanks for calling in and sharing that. 888-874-4888. It's amazing because just from yesterday to today, we see even more craziness going on, including surrounding Jeff Sessions. So he's got a lot of problems right now. And it's kind of hypocritical, too. You know, this idea that, oh, my God, he was seen speaking to the Russian ambassador. It's an obsession now about who was seen speaking or who had placed calls to the Russian ambassador, and they're all in conniptions over this thing, when in fact there are greater issues here and they're not even dealing with them. So while they go on their witch hunt as to who was talking to whom and why and whatnot, all of these other major issues that need immediate attention are just cast aside for the moment. And it is the month of March. One would imagine that the government should be in formation by now and moving along with whatever it is they're moving along with so that people can move along with their protests. You know, it's very interesting to observe that. All right, so just to remind you, we shifted. The number is back to the old number, 888 874-4888. That's the number. We're back to our old and regular number so that you can call in. What do you think of the developments of this week that we've touched on? What do you think that it tells us that we have to do? And in the meantime, what is it showing us about, you know, the moribund state of the opposition? There's a lot of talk, but there isn't very much action going on. The Democrats have not, still not, in my opinion, they still have not formulated a plan. What is the plan? What is it, other than reacting, you know, on a day-by-day basis, you're reacting to things that are going on, that's fine, but there seems to be no plan. And even on the outside of the, you know, the established political circles, we're not seeing very much of a plan as such, and how they are executing the plan or intend to execute the plan, other than say no. This is a thing that has been a pet peeve of mine. It's one thing to say no, and it's important to say no. But what is your counter plan? And how do you get it implemented? Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, I'm hanging in. How about you?
Oh, hanging in there. Still trying to get over the last part of my sickness, so bear with me if I start coughing again.
Oh, yeah, you had a cold the last time we talked.
Yeah. So I wanted to get your take on this thing where the HBCU president visited Trump, because I had a lively discussion with some people on this, and you know,
HBCUs are historically black colleges and universities.
Yes. So apparently they all went to the White House earlier this week. Not all of them, but you know, most of them went to the White House. I believe it was about 50 presidents or so that went. And I guess Trump is promising them that he would make the schools, HBCUs, a top priority because of the fact that over the Obama administration, they have been struggling financially, where some of them had to close. So I'm having discussions with people about this, and, you know, I don't get why some black folks are excited about this, because, you know, the thing is that, you know, I understand Obama, you know, Obama basically ignored the HBCUs and basically he's part of why they're in the situation that they're in now. But at the same time, if Obama didn't give you anything, what makes you think, you know, Trump is going to do something for HBCUs? And in all honestly, you know, this is not even a promise that he's going to give them, you know, any money. He just said he would make them a priority. But this goes to the fact that, you know, we've got black people in the community who understand the damage that Obama has done to the political, you know, to the politics of, you know, of our, you know, of our thinking. But at the same time, you know, to go to, you know, to rely on the Republicans to repair it is something that I just don't understand with, you know, with people in our community. You know, it's like, I understand Obama has done a lot of damage, but at the same time, you know, like I said before, you don't escape from one plantation and go to the other plantation. You know, that's my thing with, you know, with the whole thing. I'm a firm believer that the Democrats or the Republicans aren't the answer to our problems. But you have a lot of black folks who are loyal to the Democratic Party, or that you have some who leave the Democratic Party and go to the Republican Party. So, you know, it's that weird dynamic we have in our community. And I don't know, maybe, I don't know if it's, you know, just political ignorance or people just want a safe place to lay their heads at, you know, and this conversation kind of brings out that, you know, that to me, dysfunction that we have, you know, in our community with politics.
Well, aren't you being a little bit of a purist here?
Here's this scenario.
HBCUs, the historically black colleges and universities, are close to extinction. Mm-hmm. That's how serious the situation is. Mm-hmm. And it didn't help at all that for 8 years that Barack Obama could have done something. He didn't. In fact, he even further imperiled them because, you know, the student loan issues, he rescinded on that. So that as stressed as they were in offering higher education, and in many cases, by the way, HBCUs offer an educational opportunity that their students otherwise wouldn't have, because many schools would not accept their grades. Many schools, as you know, are very racially inclined when they do intake. And it is something to be said that with all that is going on, people are still very much attached to the idea of getting an education in a historically black college and university, to the extent that one of the crises that is creeping up now is that many whites are seeking to attend HBCUs. And compared to the black students and their financial status, they are able to afford to pay the tuition that the HBCUs would charge. So there's this question now about the future, the actual future of HBCUs as the population, the student population, changes with admission in order to be afloat. The colleges are taking people in who could afford to pay. And in that sense, HBCUs are becoming, and there's a big argument about that, a big debate, they're becoming less black. they're being invaded. But the black president did nothing.
And that's true.
And these schools, since the Civil War, I mean, we had the outrageous comment by the secretary, the newly installed Secretary of Education, saying, isn't it great that we have HBCUs as educational choice?
Yeah, I saw that tweet.
But it's a huge dilemma. The historically black colleges, many of them have closed. They simply could not sustain themselves. And the African-American president paid them no attention whatsoever, did not help.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if help comes from the devil, I think they would have considered it. This was also, you know, big public relations, and it's unfortunate, but, you know, this is what you have to deal with in politics. Omarosa Manigault, who was one of the apprentice contestants, she's not particularly well-liked, but that doesn't matter. The fact is that she arranged this as a major PR effort, and Donald Trump signed something. He signed an executive order. We have no idea about the specifics, except that he, in his executive order, affirms the value of historically black colleges and universities, and presumptively endorses the idea that they should continue, and committed himself to helping to support it. So they came running. They said, okay, we'll take some help because we desperately need it. It's a major crisis. So on the one hand, I mean, in the ideal world, you'd like it to be different. You'd like HBCUs to be a very key area of support for the African American community itself, as it has always been. The community, the black community, black people supported the institutions. And we have seen a marked decline in that support, to the point where the institutions themselves are now on the brink of extinction. So what do you do?
And that's the whole point, Utrice. It's like whenever we're in trouble, we look to other people. We don't look to ourselves.
The black community isn't supporting it the way it ought to be, because, you know, I don't know why. We have all these major money-making folk who can throw a couple of million into a pot and help the HBCUs out, but they have other things on their minds.
I want to add this, Utrice, because I was in Nashville over the summer visiting a friend, and he was telling me about, you know, Nashville has two HBCUs. They have Fisk University, and then they have Tennessee State. And he was telling me how, you know, Tennessee State is a stable, you know, it's stable, but Fisk is in trouble. Fisk is financially in trouble. And to me, I was like, okay, so you have two HBCUs, one who's on good financial ground, and the other is in trouble. Now, as most historians know, Fisk is the university that produced W.E.B. Du Bois and other people, you know. So I'm like, why can't the HBCUs, you know, try to get together to support the struggling ones? Because there are some who are still, you know, financially stable, or some, there are some who are, you know, very few who are in good financial standing, but why can't they get together to support the ones who are? I mean, it's almost like, you know, in an instance like with, you know, with some Catholic churches in the community, you know, they kind of support the ones who are struggling, you know, that type of thing. So I don't, you know, I don't get why they can't look into that system of self, you know, of self-reliance, you know, instead of going to a president who, the previous president who looked like them, didn't do anything for them. But now they're trying to go to a president who basically despises them, you know, if you ask me, to ask for some support. I don't get it.
Well, I get it. This is what has happened to many venerable African-American institutions. They have been allowed to die. And they've been allowed to die for one reason, just absolute indifference and lack of support. Every year for the past, 5-6 years, I've been privileged to work with friends of mine in giving a concert in Harlem. It's at the St. James Presbyterian Church. It's 120 years old. It was the church that was formed by extraordinary pastors, one of whom, John B. Russworm, was the father of the Black Press.
Mm-hmm.
And this church is on the brink of dying.
Oh, wow.
It's dying. There's no real support from the community. And this is a story that is constantly repeated throughout the Black community. We turn our backs on venerable institutions, and we see no reason to become involved. We see no reason to help the continuity of these institutions. And so all across America, we're losing very, very important institutions for lack of support. Now, on one hand, you can make a case that, look, everybody's hurting. And the communities in which these institutions are and the people that they're serving themselves are strapped. But I tell you, people have to learn how to reinvest, because that is a key to survival. People were able, just out of slavery, to scrape. In fact, that's how these historically black colleges and universities were formed, you know, in the basement of churches by former slaves. Many times these are people who didn't have much money at all. And still they scrimped and saved and built these institutions. And there's something here that needs to be examined as to why African Americans literally see no reason to reinvest and to keep these institutions going. There's no excuse. Plain as
simple. Yeah, you're right.
There is no excuse for it. And look at what they chose to. When these folks decided to build something, they didn't build a football field. They didn't build a basketball court. They built schools. They built hospitals. All of the black, historically black colleges and universities share that kind of mindset. They built things that in turn would contribute to rebuilding and reconstituting the community. And we are at a stage where people don't see this as important. You know, if you took one of the VMA awards, you know, just one, you can do a great deal to help the entire collection of black colleges and institutions. So that is the work that we have to do. And we can't pretend, and we have to face the facts. You had a black president cutting financial aid to the HBCUs. What kind of craziness is that?
That is true. That is true.
Okay. But so if help comes from a Martian at this point, I say take it.
And I agree with you, but the thing is that it seems like they are relying on their survival from Donald Trump. And the problem I have with this is you just eloquently explained it. This should be a self-sustaining institutions that should be supported by the community. And here's the thing that I thought of when I was listening to you. I remember seeing commercials when I was younger about the United Negro College Fund and how to support it, and the mine is a terrible thing to waste. I hardly see any commercials about the United Negro College Fund at all. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I know they exist, but I don't even know if they're getting as much money as they used to get, because I used to see them on commercials every Saturday, you know, when I used to watch TV, but I don't even see it anymore. So I see there is an effort, you know, from that point alone to definitely close a lot of these, you know, historically black universities and institutions that, like you said, were built from the ground up, you know.
Absolutely.
It is a shame that we need to stress this more, you know, and basically let people know that this is our history. This is something that, you know, this is one of the institutions that we built, you know, from where we came from. So,
well,
yeah.
to be thorough about it, many of the historically black colleges and universities got a leg up from land grants. This is coming out of slavery, where the old members of the slaveocracy, in order to demonstrate they had a heart, said, okay, we'll give you some land over here, or mm-hmm. we'll help you build a university or a college. But essentially the work was done to build these institutions. The work was done by African Americans themselves. And I don't understand why we don't see what we're doing when we abandon these institutions. It's incredible. So that too is a manifestation of, you know, the experience of being devalued, You have no sense of obligation to each other. You have no sense of obligation to the future, to helping to build the future. There's no great value that you place on the things that are necessary to keep you redeemed. And we have to lay the blame squarely on ourselves. And, you know, Barack Obama needs to be brought to task for this. But I'd said that, you know, during his 8 years,
mm-hmm.
that there was
yeah,
no
right.
reason that historically black colleges and universities should have suffered the whammy from his administration. When you
and
not just them, but other small colleges and universities as well. I mean, a nation talks so much about the value of education. Look what it does. It does everything to frustrate people from getting an education and the process itself, the institutions itself. It is mind-boggling how hypocritical. But that is not the government's responsibility so much. It is first and foremost the responsibility of the community to stand up and sustain those institutions that were brought into being at tremendous sacrifice, that clearly have performed spectacularly. They've done a great service. They have delivered quality education. And apart from that, they have maintained a line of continuity. But we don't seem to value that.
Well, Yatrice, thank you for your input on this, and I really appreciate you, and you have a great weekend.
Thank you. Great talking with you. John, you're on the air.
Yatrice, excuse me. Hi, how are you doing? I'm so happy to be speaking with you. I was somewhat concerned a couple weeks ago, but I'm glad that you are hanging in there and are recovering and are in good form and good spirits.
Yeah, I'm fooling the public.
Yes,
as we almost learned to do.
Yes, exactly. But yes,
actually, I'm coming along.
A
bunch of pins and rods and whatnot, but we coming along.
Okay, well, great. Well, just a couple of things on this whole HBCU White House fiasco. All of those people, those presidents, administrators who showed up, they were played by a master con man. I come from a business background, and I know when you go into a high-profile meeting like that, you don't walk out the door empty-handed. And so, you know, they should have never gone in without knowing they were going to come out with something in hand. And so they were played, and then that
but we don't
went
know.
On the sofa.
We don't know yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, they still have to compel Trump to make that promise real.
That's okay. Well. Hopefully, they'll be able to do that. But the sight of that woman on that sofa with that photograph, that's something that will never leave my head. It's with such disrespect to everyone there in terms of the black presidents and administrators, and would never have been done for any other high-level officials coming who were not black. I'm convinced of that. The other thing is you've armed me to survive these Trump days and to, in not a passive way, but in an assertive way. And what I have been doing is holding my congresspeople accountable. And I would encourage everyone to do that. I have called my congresspeople and senators and have asked them, their staff, directly, what is your plan? And unfortunately, nobody's been able to tell me what the plan is to counter Mr. Trump and his deeds. And so hopefully I put that on their radar to be able and have insisted that they step up with a plan that they can share with their constituents so that we can be on board collectively. But it is somewhat shocking that that none have been able to say, well, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and that includes the Congressional Black Caucus. So they must have a plan in order for any possibility for there to be any kind of significant recovery. Otherwise, as I've told my congressman from Brooklyn, his office. I said, well, otherwise you're useless. And if they're not going to step up and be an actual oppositional party against the Trump administration, then they're useless to the people. But thank you. You've emboldened me.
I'm glad about that.
Yes. So I would encourage others to do so and in our own small way to get out and do something in the grassroots of, talking to communities, your neighbors. We must be engaged, and you're a big help with that as well. But thank you so much.
Thank you, John. Great to hear from you.
Yes,
Willie,
thank you.
From Brooklyn, you're on the air. Is Willie there?
Hello?
You're on the air, Willie.
Yes, my sister. How are we feeling? I'm so glad.
I'm
glad. I'm so happy you're okay. Don't know anymore. I don't know anymore. Because there's so many things going on. I don't know what to say. But anyway, what I'd like to say from my vantage point, the most powerful things we have on this earth, I believe it's truth. That's it. And the problem with the HBCUs. I think it's very simple. Deception, lies, and deceit. I think that's what it is. Because most of our people are not being informed. Now the American people in general are misled and deceived. That's why we have Trump, you see. So I'm saying that to say, the work that you personally are doing, that's enough to educate everybody. Because you take a lie and dress it up. So you make it palatable for everyone. Now, the brother minister, now he's just going to give you the naked truth. Whether you like it or not, he's going to give it to you just the way it is. And if
you're talking about Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, my sister. Yes. Now, if we're going to, we want the truth to get out, we have to get the message of PRN out. Because we have some wonderful and great people working at PRN. And these people, they're not afraid of telling the truth. Implementing the truth. Because, you see, from my understanding, I know that everyone that's on PRN, the moment you sit down in front of that microphone, I mean, you've been targeted. I know this. Now, the listeners, our job, you guys are doing your job, and it could not have been done better. Our job is to make it bigger. So 99% of 80% of America should have their information from PRN, because these from my understanding of and listening to the people there, they're telling the absolute truth, and that's the most powerful thing that we have. You see what I'm saying? So if we really were doing our job as a family, then everything would just fall in place. Now, one more thing I want to talk about. I don't know what to call it. Let me put it as kind as I could. This so-called president that you have. Now, I've been heard. I've heard
you,
him
you
saying,
give him to me.
I've heard him saying, oh,
the president that I have, but all right, go ahead.
There's certain things it really irritates me, because you're telling me I have to respect the office. Now, you're not talking to a. You're insulting my intelligence and my decency. Number one, he's an outright liar. They have people who check behind this man. Now, I don't have no respect for no liars. Much more a hater and a bigot. And you're telling me to respect him? You must be crazy.
I know when you say you don't mean me, because
you're talking about the
establishment. The establishment imparts these values that you should respect the president and so forth. Well, you can understand why they say that, because irrespective of the fact that they're talking about Trump specifically, they say these things because they have, they're addressing the respect for the office, irrespective of who is occupying the office. But there is a wide view that the office needs to be respected, even when the occupant of the office really doesn't deserve it.
Wait, hold on. Did they respect? We do know our brother. He wasn't perfect. We know we had a lot of problems. He was just a crook. However, he had some dignity and some decency with him. I remember.
So are you making the case, really, for
no,
crook? You say, as long as he's dignified.
No. I still think Obama, Michelle, and Sasha, and Malika, and the two dogs, they have to go to jail. I still think so. Because of what they did with the Clinton Foundation. I still believe
even
that.
The dogs.
That was criminal. With Bill Clinton and Sister Hillary. They all got to go to jail because these are criminal acts. Evil acts. You see what I'm saying? However, mm-hmm. I remember you did a program on Frederick Roof with this guy's great-grandfather. Now, you did a wonderful program on him. I said, oh, my God. Now I know who this guy is. Well, we can't say what he is. But in Khalid Muhammad's words, you're just another mouse. Dangle. I hate to say these things. But if you, as the president, so-called president, the hatred that you spew about a nation of people, murderers and rapists, a nation of people, when in truth, your great-grandfather, this comes from your program, but I know you can't say, you dress up a lie, which is fine. But I'm saying, oh, my God, this guy, money came from his money came from prostitution and drugs. Isn't that right?
That's what was reported.
Exactly.
I read you the article from Klondike Region.
So if you look at his demeanor, this guy is just a common thug. You see, I know you can't say that, or you choose not to say that. But the truth is, he's just a common thug. And you tell me I got to respect him? Look at the way the hatred and the bigotry he dealt with Obama. Do you remember how he treated Obama? You could see the hatred, the bigotry, and the venom in this man. And you're telling me, no, I got to respect him?
I'm not telling you to respect him. I'm telling you, form your own opinion. But I know what you mean. You're talking about, in a general sense, this is what people say the standard should be, that even if you despise the president, you should respect his office. We hear that. But in the meantime, the question is he what he is? And, are you obligated to respect somebody who has these traits, even if they occupy the presidency of the United States? You say what you need to say.
My sister, you respect, it works both ways. You respect people regardless of what. That's from my perspective. Not because mm-hmm. you're from office. That's absurd. You're a thug and a criminal and a hater that causes people to be dying, and you tell me I got to respect it?
I get it.
I can't do that.
I get your view.
That's just
I get
not
your view.
Me. Look, you remember when you were at BA? WBA. You remember when you were there? One of the same people made up a lie on you. And your life was... Your life was threatened because of that lie. And so many of these Negroes, because they had no respect for themselves, their family, and their people, went along with these people against you.
I think there's enough evidence. I think they have come to see what the truth actually is and was. I don't know whether they would publicly admit it or not, but that's up to them. I've gone on with my life.
I know that, my sister. And I'm so happy that you are, because guess what? Eventually, you will become the voice of, just like Muhammad Ali, the voice of America. You see what I'm saying? Because you stand on principle and you stand on truth. When Muhammad Ali was in his prime, that brother, many people went to a fight. They were half went to see a fight. The other half went to see him do the ballet dance. And he was carrying the world on his shoulder and kicking you know what at the same time. That's how bad that brother was. When he died, his death showed us something. There was over 100,000 people. That's what they're doing. Come from every corner of the earth. Why they came, I don't know. But that's how much that brother was respected. And these people are a living example for us to go by. But instead of standing with them, we go along with their lies and deception. That's all I have to say, my sister. I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Oh, you know it is mutual, Willie. You know it is. Thank you so much for calling. Great to hear from you today.
Oh, wait. One more thing, by the way. Muslim terrorist. Muhammad Ali was a Muslim. A Jew, a Christian. If you could point me to one in their death that have drawn so many people from every corner of the earth, correct me. But I've never seen or heard anything like that. One man. And at the time he was in his prime, he was one of the most hated men in America. Isn't that correct?
It was. I mean, it was not the people's view. It was the system's view. The system was remarkably different and remained consistently different and correct. That's the problem. The system insisted that he was something other than what the people felt he was. And the people held to their view. Whatever the system did to just do so much injury to his character and his name, it did not faze the people at all. They understood that he was a man of impeccable character. And it lasts to this day. Thanks a lot for your call today. Cheered me up quite a bit. Let's talk to Frank from Philly. You're on the air.
Hello, you, Therese.
Hello, Frank.
Hope you're well. And I
Thank
hope you're
I got
recovering
your note.
Nicely.
What a wonderful note. Thank you. Frank sent a note talking about the discussion we had just yesterday and how extraordinary it was.
It
lifted my spirits, because in four calls from listeners, we got a very clear picture about the level of intellectual functioning out there. And it was just an extraordinary experience. I agree with you on that.
It was. It just covered the waterfront. And it was so much more honest and frank, no pun intended there, than your average Sunday talk show. It would have been so illuminating for so many hundreds of millions of people. I mean, it was just wonderful. And that's what I wanted to bring up, too, because while I was listening to the show and somebody said, the people are going to ignore system analysis, but they're going to, fritter their time away with demonstrations. And just at that moment, I heard a noise coming from the streets, and I see a crowd of young people coming down carrying signs, defy Trump, defend Philly, expand sanctuary, which none of these are bad, but it's just the idea that they really don't believe that it's a system. They believe that Trump alone is the problem. And if they can just get Trump out of the way, everything's going to be all right, and all right again. And if they think in terms of all right again, they're wrong, because it wasn't right before he came along, So, and also, You had said earlier in the show, or one of your callers said, both of you said, you know, how quiet it is with the Democrats, how quiet it is with the Black Caucus. And I think that they're quiet, but I also think that, you know, since they're talking about, you know, like two opposing sides of the deep state fighting each other, I think that there's going to be some plan. I think there's going to be more demonstrations, violent ones, pointless, you know, to create the chaos and just keep it as chaotic as they possibly can. And in so doing, they will make it impossible for the regular people to pursue anything that would be to their political advantage. That's how I'm seeing it.
Well, and I point that out, the quiet and the silence, because it is also affecting those constituencies that shouldn't be quiet. They should be right now putting their plans together, their alternative leadership plans together. We should know, I mean, that includes, by the way, the Green Party, the other parties and movements are out there, the Sanders folks. Everybody has just taken, a step back to waiting to see what happens. This is the time to get into serious organizing and putting together a plan for alternative leadership. We should operate on the premise that the Democratic Party is of no use anymore. Just scratch it, you know, give them some kudos for whatever it is they have done, but we should be planning beyond them, and we should be discussing how we move forward beyond them. But everybody's sitting waiting to see, you know, what will happen next, which will then inform their actions. It's just crazy to me.
Well, I think, too, you know, you sort of touched on it when you were very perturbed about Jill Stein coming and demanding a recount. And I thought at first, well, I don't know what she's so upset about. But then I thought about it afterwards because I remembered an interview with the Libertarian vice president while the election was, the campaigning was going full throttle. And he's talking, you know, so a rhapsody about Hillary Clinton. I thought, how is it that this guy is running against her and talking so well about her, just like Bernie Sanders was doing? So it's got, I know this is silly to say. I don't know if the somehow that the Democrats can co-opt them all. I don't know. It seems impossible to me. But then I wonder, when I hear them talk, what they're talking about, you know? Why would he?
And you know the reason you're wondering is because it's happening.
Yeah.
It is happening.
Crazy. It doesn't make sense. Do you see what I'm saying? It
yeah, it's co-optation in slow motion. They have already been co-opted. The same with Ellis, Keith Ellis, who is supposed to be the firebrand progressive, he's just about signed on.
He's on one side, he's complaining about the Palestinians, and then he's, you know, very vocal about, you know, gravestones getting knocked over in Jewish cemeteries, which isn't the same thing. You know, it's people living in rubble and freezing to death because all they've got for walls are tarp, you know.
The man was sitting next to, rubbing shoulders, I mean, literally shoulder to shoulder with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, listening to Trump's speech. Now, how ironic is that? what a screenshot that is.
That's a strange combination. It really is. I didn't see that.
What is happening, or what should be happening, is people should be furious at work. I mean, incredible amounts of energy into organizing for something new, something next. We can't, what's the Democratic Party? What relevance will the Democratic Party be in the immediate future? None. Aren't we seeing these other organizations doing what I said they should be doing for quite some time now, which is getting really obsessed with the idea of organizing new constituencies and a new political direction? That's what they ought to be doing. but they also are part of the observers. They observing what's going on, and while that's going, while the observation is going on, there's no action. There's no action.
Right. It's like they've all been replaced by the pod people or something, you know, and just going along. It's really strange. But I think that you actually, when you basically agreed with me when I said I felt as though the Democrats had gotten to them, and you said, yeah, they have. So until the time, I guess they're willing to be independent, and I don't know how that's going to happen.
Well, we'll see. Thanks so much. Thank you all for calling in today and contributing to this wonderful conversation. I tell you, this is like medicine. It helps revive the spirit to know that people are still thinking, and they're thinking tactically. They're thinking very, very carefully about the realities that confront us and ways that we can live through them. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus, and we'll see each other on Monday. In the meantime, surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life, and a pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.